The final edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Welcome to the final edition Radio Hour. I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Tony Hendra. Tonight, we celebrate all that makes America great.
What are you talking about, Tony? We have a bunch of stuff on Russia and ancient Rome and...
Exactly. It's great that we're not Russia or ancient Rome.
Not yet, at least. And what about all the pieces we have on all the gun violence and wasting time on the internet and the complete demise of responsible journalism?
And everything else that makes America great.
You mean terrible?
No, I mean great. All these seemingly terrible things are great. At least they are for comedians like me, pining away on the shores of Great Britain long, long ago, wishing for a better life.
Oh, so you're saying America's great for you and your life?
Yes, of course, like all immigrants. It's great for me and my life.
All right, well, let's have a little talk about how it was so great for you and your life.
Super. Oh, and can we make fun of Ted Cruz?
Of course. After all, this is...
The final edition Radio.
El Segundo, come quick. There's a man outside. He wants to fight you.
All right. Probably another damn liberal looking to make his mark.
No, boss. This guy is different. He says he knows you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He says he was first, then you came second. He says that's why they call you El Segundo. He says his name is Firsty.
I hear you're looking for me.
You second?
Yeah. Seems so.
Second Amendment?
Yeah.
Well, I'm first. First Amendment. We need to speak.
Well, I'm a man of action, not words.
So they say. They also say you got a not-so-well-regulated militia to do your action for you.
Yep. Everyone packing heat.
Well, I've assembled some folks, too. Video games, movies, reality TV. And we're tired of taking blame for all the trouble you've been causing.
Yeah, what trouble's that?
Death, mayhem, massacre, gunfights at the schoolhouse, gunfights at the playhouse, gunfights at the whorehouse.
Well, that wasn't us started that trouble. I heard it was you, Firsty, inspiring every one of my boys with your violent imagery.
We were just trying to entertain. You gave them the automatic weapons to act out their nonsense, and now we got a lot of dead folks.
Not my concern. It's your fault.
No, sir. It's your fault.
It's on you, so shut up.
I will not shut up. That's my whole thing. I'm pretty sure the people of this town can't survive without talking.
And I'm pretty sure they can't survive without guns.
If I can't yell fire in a crowded theater, why for can you fire off 1,000 armor-piercing bullets in one?
Maybe you should have got yourself a better lobby, Firsty.
That ain't how it's supposed to work, second. That ain't right.
Actually, it is right. It's my Second Amendment right.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
I was wondering when you'd finally say that.
Draw!
Stop this!
And who the hell are you?
I'm Six!
The Sixth Amendment? Ensuring a fair and speedy trial?
No! The Sixth Commandment! Thou shalt
The Final Edition salutes another Facebook hero.
David Mannheimer has a score on Word Twist that is not just high. It is unapproachable. Without his time and sacrifice, the all-time high score in Word Twist would not be as high.
This is MSNBC Midday. I'm your host, and my name doesn't matter. Even I can't tell this show from the next one. Today, we're talking about why gay marriages are more important than straight marriages. And with me in the studio are two other MSNBC hosts whose names also aren't important. Hello.
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 Today, our topic is still same-sex marriage because it seems to me that's the new civil rights issue of our time. So this is the chance for straight people to prove we would have stood with Martin Luther King Jr. Guest number one, do you agree?
Well, my view of all things gay is much less self-interested than yours. I just think that same-sex things are worth more than straight things, and this is a mathematical fact. For instance, yesterday I found a dollar.
A dollar. Okay.
A gay dollar.
Oh, a gay dollar. That's so wonderful.
And valuable. It turns out that in the monetary exchange rate, a gay dollar is worth about $1.23 of a straight dollar.
That's even better than the Canadian dollar.
Can I just add one thing to the conversation?
Go ahead, guest number two.
I have many gay friends, and I am frequently offended on their behalf.
I'm so glad you said that. That is so important.
Well, that's all I came here to say. I'm going to take off, if that's okay with you guys.
Sure. One last question for my remaining guest. Guest number one, we're good people, right?
We're the best.
I agree.
The Final Edition salutes another Facebook hero.
If you received an inspirational video of a dog doing something, that video probably came to you directly or indirectly through Marla Sanchez. She doesn't just forward every dog video she sees. Oh, wait, that is exactly what she does. I read that wrong. She just forwards every dog video she sees. She also adopts every dog she sees. And at this moment, her tiny studio apartment looks exactly the way you imagine it.
Hey, how's it going, music listeners? I'm Gabe McGivens, and welcome to Indie World Beats. Today we have on our show a member of the most courageous punk band out there, a band that literally takes a beating for their music, Pussy Riot. Please welcome Nadezhda Tolokonnikova.
Здравствуйте.
Nadezhda, you and Pussy Riot have gone above and beyond as far as fighting to express your beliefs. You've served a prison sentence in Siberia, and recently all of you were whipped by Cossacks while performing at the Sochi Olympics.
Да.
So how do all of you continue while being punished so brutally for your convictions?
We like it.
You like it?
Да. When we were first sent to Siberia, we were subjected to all of the punishments that are included in a sentence in Siberia. You know, solitary confinement, forced labor, beatings. We all enjoyed it. Then we said, hey, why don't we kick it up a notch? So we went to Sochi, got a good whipping and some arm twisting. It felt nice.
When did you discover that you liked physical punishment?
We all saw the Jackass movie when we were younger and thought, that looks like fun. Why don't we do that? We didn't know we would enjoy it so much.
What's next on the Pussy Riot agenda?
A world tour. We want to see where else we can get a good beating, or worse.
Like where?
Somalia, finger crossed. Hopefully deep in mountains of Afghanistan where women aren't supposed to exist. The Saudi Arabia, and then hopefully deep in mountains of Tennessee where women aren't supposed to exist.
Aren't you afraid of something worse than a beating?
We should be so lucky. We would consider a beheading a great success.
Wow. You're hardcore.
No, just Russian.
Well, this has been Indie World Beats. I'm Gabe Begivens. And join us next week where Iggy Pop will actually chop off his penis in hopes of one-upping Pussy Riot.
Is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue, shriller than all the music, cry, Caesar! Speak! Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of November.
Who is that, Brutus?
He is but an addled soothsayer. Pay him no mind.
What is your name, soothsayer?
Natus Silverus.
Why dost he tell me to beware the Ides of November?
That is the way soothsayers talk.
But why November?
He means the election.
The election is never on November 15th.
It's more dramatic that way.
What are you telling me to beware, soothsayer?
In the Roman Senate, you will lose 4 seats.
4 chairs? That doth not seem so bad.
Caesar, thy party wilt lose control of the Senate.
Art thou shitting me?
Soothsayers do not shit. I'm speaking metaphorically, of course.
Thou wilt lose West Virginis, South Dakotas, Montanus, and Moronius.
You mean Arkansasius?
Aye, and thy party wilt lose at least 2 of the following 4 toss-ups. Louisianus, Michiganio, North Carolinius, and the home of the Palinians.
No, not Alaskus. Is there anything we can do?
No, it's set in stone. And by stone, I mean the polls on my website.
Where have I heard that before?
Francus Luntzus, my lord.
He's a Francus Luntzus of the left. Soothsayer, doth this mean the end of our empire?
No, Caesar. That pretty much endeth 40 years ago under Emperor Reagan.
That's the wisest thing he speaketh all day.
Come, Brutus, let us try to raise enough money to prove this soothsayer wrong.
It is too late, Caesar. Whilst thou wast not looking, I have joined the GOP.
Et tu, Brute. I suppose thou wilt stab me in my democratic back now.
No, Caesar, we have a better weapon. The brothers... Cocos.
Coming soon, the movie that somebody, somewhere decided is going to make billions. The ads are in the subway, they're on your TV, they're on every web page you click. You cannot escape this film. Liam Neeson, or somebody very much like him, in Panic.
There's a serial terrorist in this exclusive Beverly Hills high school, but there's no need to panic.
You don't want to see this movie. You really, really don't want to see this movie. But what the hell do you know? Have you studied the focus groups? Have you looked at the marketing data? Do you even read the trade papers? No, you don't. So shut up.
How are you holding up, Stella?
You mean, how am I handling my life as an attractive, tough-as-nails high school principal who's embarrassed about her history as a beauty queen and also never fired a gun and doesn't think she could ever fire a gun and doesn't think she ever will fire a gun, so why do we keep talking about it?
Is that your whole backstory?
Yes. Oh, and I have a deaf son.
Look out!
A hero being framed. A woman who you think might be the killer until you check what time it is and realize the film is only halfway through, so it can't be her. Big fight scenes. Long speeches condemning violence. Cars that crash into themselves. A baby that almost gets crushed by an aircraft carrier. Twice. The public is already sick of this movie, and it hasn't even opened.
I'm on the phone to my deaf son. I think he can hear me.
What?
Look out!
Panic. This film looks awful, and it is going to make a crap ton of money.
Welcome to my podcast, The Foodie Network, and I'm really happy to have today's guest, Carol Spafford. She writes this awesome blog called The Secret Menu. Carol, I'm totally psyched you're here.
I am totally psyched to be here.
All right. I've been scrolling through your blog for days, and I guess, first of all, you should probably explain to people the concept of the secret menu.
Well, like, fast food restaurants have items on the menu that everybody sees,
yeah.
But there's other stuff you can order that they can serve you if you know how to ask for it.
Uh-huh.
Like, at the In-N-Out burger chain in California, okay. You can actually order a triple burger or a quadruple burger, or they can put the mustard onto it while it's still cooking and grill the mustard right into it.
Uh-huh. And the only people who know this are you and your readers.
Exactly. And it's not just In-N-Out. For example, you can go to any Chipotle and ask for a burritodilla, which is a combination of a burrito and a quesadilla. And they will know exactly what you're talking about.
Wow. And what if they don't?
Then you should demand to speak to the manager, because that is bullshit.
What about Pizza Hut? You said in your blog that if you ask for a pizza easy over, they have to flip it in the oven when it's half done.
Yeah. And you can make them do that. And something I found out today, if you go to a Taco Bell and ask an employee to sit on your burrito, they totally will.
That's amazing. How do fast food workers react when you ask them for this stuff?
Everyone is always really impressed when you're hip to the secret menu. For instance, I was in a KFC telling them to take a mallet and break all the bones in my chicken legs. And the lady behind the counter said, "That is so cool. You are such a cool person." And she like said it over and over and over again, just like that.
That is cool. I'm talking to Carol Spafford. Check out her blog, The Secret Menu. And Carol, one last question. What is the most amazing secret menu item you found?
It turns out that you can walk into literally every restaurant in America and order a potato chip pie.
Whoa.
Nobody knows about this except everyone who has ever worked in a restaurant.
Well, that's hardly anybody.
Exactly.
So what's in a potato chip pie?
The last time I ordered one, I sneaked into the kitchen and watched them make it.
Yeah.
And it turns out the secret ingredient is spit.
Uh-huh.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
On the last week of every month, Andy Breckenridge sends out invitations, letting people know that his improv team, Babies Gone Wild, is playing the 7 o'clock show in the basement under Nick's lounge. Without these constant reminders, we would never know these shows were happening. And if he had not sent them in the form of an invitation, we would never have known that we were allowed in.
This is an automated update from LinkedIn.com to remind you that you're having a work anniversary. Today, you have now been working for 3 years at...
Unemployed!
Congratulations! If you have time in your busy day, could you please take our survey about your work at...
Unemployed!
Is your work satisfying at...
Unemployed!
Are you proud to tell people you're a part of...
Unemployed!
Are people more or less interested in your opinion when they hear you work at...
Unemployed!
Thank you for taking our survey. In addition, we have also told everyone on your contact list about your work anniversary and asked them to send their congratulations. Here are their messages.
Tim, this is your father. If this is a joke, I don't get it. Your mother wants to know if you're eating.
End of congratulatory messages. Well, we'll let you get back to work now, but thank you for sharing your career achievements with LinkedIn, and we hope that you have many more years ahead at...
Unemployed!
This is MSNBC's Midday. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being a part of my journey. I am your midday host, and my name still doesn't matter because I haven't been issued one by NBC. I'm hoping to get Martin Bashir's now that he's no longer using it.
In any case, my first guest tonight is another MSNBC host whose name also doesn't matter.
Hello.
And we're joined by a new MSNBC host who is trying to sound like Rachel Maddow. And that's actually your name?
Yes, Daryl trying to sound like Rachel Maddow. I had it legally changed.
Well, you get your own name. Good for you. Tonight, we're going to talk about why Republicans are always racist, no matter what they do and no matter what the context. And guest number one, I want to start with you. Because when I was a little girl, I was walking to junior high, and I should mention I was two grades ahead, when I saw a black man being rejected for a home loan in the middle of the street in broad daylight. 2 years later, I was at Harvard, researching a thesis on race relations in a capitalist paradigm. And guest number one, my question to you is this. Do I actually seem to care what you think?
Well, I was actually watching Fox News when Sean Hannity came on wearing a red tie. And you know what? None of his guests call him out on his blatant racism.
Don't Republicans get it?
They just don't get it.
Why don't they get it? Let's put this to Daryl trying to sound like Rachel Maddow. Daryl, why don't Republicans get it?
Well, to explain that, let me first talk about an obscure district election for state assembly in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Milt Summers is the leading Democratic candidate in District 39 near Carson City, but he's in a runoff election with Mike Stammers. Notice the similarity in the names.
Mm-hmm.
If voters cannot distinguish Summers and Stammers, it bodes ill for Democrats in the general election against the Republican Max Simmers.
Mm-hmm.
And the loss of a Democratic seat in the Nevada Assembly becomes a national issue if America repeals the 17th Amendment and starts electing U.S. senators through state legislatures as we did before 1913.
Interesting. Is this going anywhere?
No.
Hey, I just wanted to point out that I have many black friends, and you know, no two are exactly alike.
That is so true. That is so important. I am glad you said that. Well, just to round things out, we thought we'd have a little humor on the show. But we've been talking about race, so we can't make it too humorous. It's our top five list of secret racist code words or phrases Republicans use. Number five, Reagan. Number four, Lexus. Number three, Negroid. Number two, Big Mama Jamma. And the number one secret racist code word or phrase Republicans use is, I'm not racist.
That is great. That is hilarious. That top five list is exactly half as funny as a top 10 list.
Can I just say that it was so hot today that I saw a dog chasing a cat and they were both walking. And that is a hate crime.
That is exactly right. Well, after the break, I'm going to call for a national conversation about national conversations. So stay right here.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
For any woman who has been on OkCupid and has wanted the world to know how stupid everyone looks when they're trying to start a conversation online, Laura Benning has posted the many imaginative ways she has told off some lonely schmuck who has approached her in an awkward fashion. Log on. See how clever she is.
Welcome back to the final edition Radio Hour, a more perfect onion.
After the smashing success of our discussion last week about the 30th anniversary of Spinal Tap, we have decided that we will continue what is now a series of conversations about comedy and history and satire and its place in the world between myself, Jeff Kreisler, and Tony Hendra.
Yes, it's true that it's the 30th anniversary of Spinal Tap this year, but it is, in fact, this very week was the 50th anniversary of my landing on these shores. And at the time, I was fairly fresh out of Cambridge, where I had been in the footlights with, amongst others, John Cleese and Graham Chapman. And I had a partner in those days, a guy called Nick Ullett. And we had established a little reputation for ourselves in London after coming down from Cambridge. And one of the places we played was called the Blue Angel. And one of the headliners who was booked in the Blue Angel was Jackie Mason. And he had a manager whose name was Bob or Robert Chartoff, who would later go on to many wonderful things, such as producing Rocky 1 through 28. And Bob not only liked us, but he said, if you ever want to come to New York, I will take you under my wing and manage you. And who knows, you might become the Beatles of comedy.
That's great.
And that was a very nice, crisp little slogan to live on. And at that time, you could get a first-class stateroom on an ocean-going liner from Southampton to New York if you agreed to do a show for the passengers.
Yeah.
Just one show in the course of a four and a half
year. The original crossing. Cruise ship gig.
Indeed. Indeed. And so we thought that was pretty great. And we got our first class stateroom and sailed from Southampton in late March of 1964. And as we found out later from the crew, it was the worst crossing that anyone could remember.
Hmm.
So bad, in fact, that the entire complement of 800 passengers got violently seasick, and except for me.
From the ships tossing the sail, or the cruise itself was...
And the SS United States, by the way, had special trimmers, I think they were called, which were supposed to control, you know, pitching and yawing. Despite them, it was a hideous crossing, and so we never had to do our show. So, anyway, on the morning of March the 23rd, 1964, after a Scotch-fueled evening and night, staying up to see the Statue of Liberty
preparing rise. To welcome America.
Indeed.
As she welcomed you.
Indeed. Seeing the Statue of Liberty rise out of the polluted mist of New York Harbor.
It's very clean now, by the way.
Very clean. And I must say, Liberty was a little bit of a disappointment, but I didn't see her entire body, just her head, the crown, basically. And within...
Do you think that part of your development as a satirist has to do with the fact that you just saw clouded Liberty?
Yes, that's actually a very good point. That image has indeed stayed with me. I see liberty as through a polluted mist.
I
unclear.
That is your album cover. Liberty, your next album cover.
Liberty is opaque to me. But in any event, Bob had arranged for us to appear at a Hootenanny. And a Hootenanny was kind of like American Idol for folk singers and mimes and other entertainers.
When I first got to New York, there was the alt scene at the time, back in the end of the 90s, I guess. There was a great show. It was called the Hootenanny. It was a Sunday night, and it was a variety show in what I consider true New York style, from fire eaters and strippers to comedians and just acts I can't even describe.
Well,
I don't know if that's what you had. But.
Yes, I mean, the Hootenanny at that time really meant kind of the folky fringe,
mm-hmm.
and comedians who aspired to that, which were not, there were not very many of them, but and it took place at a place called the Bitter End, legendary Bitter End. So at the time, we were Nick and I were doing our kind of footlightsy Cambridge twittering kind of British satire, and. It was pieces like this.
We'd like to sing you now, quite seriously, one of the most beautiful lyrics ever written in the English language. What else could I mean but Wordsworth's very famous poem, To the Daffodils?
I wonder lonely as a cloud that floats on high or really deep blue. Well, what sorts are around? A host of golden daffodils beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze.
All this.
Good evening. Here is the news. I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Here are the news. It was announced this morning that unless Britain's debt to the International Monetary Fund is not discharged by the end of the month, the government will be forced to accept the American government's generous offer of $500 million and sell the Queen.
So we went on with this kind of material at the bitter end, and for completely unexplained reasons, brought the house down. And
it's just like that for every comedian.
This
gig, Jackie Mason brings you over to New Country. First gig, you kill it. Perfect. I hate you so much.
We kill. And as it happened, we never killed again for quite some time. But based upon this act of mass murder, we actually got like 6 months of work.
Because
we were right then and there after like a day in New York. We were hot in New York. It was fantastic. And the first job. The first booking we got, or the first booking we accepted, was at a very new place called the Café Ogogo, which had just opened across Bleecker Street. And the owner, Howie Solomon, wanted us to open for his first big comedy act, who was Lenny Bruce. So Hendra and Ullett actually opened for Lenny Bruce at his legendary gig, which in April of 1964. And we sort of knew all his routines. So we were sitting there on the edge of the stage, literally at his feet. And although many people who've written about this gig, because as will unfold, it was a particularly notorious one, which basically ended Lenny's career, have said that Lenny was already in decline at that point. But I didn't think so at all, and I knew his material fairly well. But he did this sort of wonderful, seemed to me like almost like a victory lap, where he was doing his well known material, such as this.
Ladies are one emotion, and guys detach. Not consciously detached, but they just do detach. Like a lady can't go through a plate glass window and go to bed with you 5 seconds later. But guys can have head-on collisions with Greyhound buses. In disaster areas. Everybody's laying dead on the highway. Not only the hospital, in the ambulance, the guy makes play for the nurse. Like, how could he do a thing at a time like that? Well, I got horny. What? You're hot. How could you be hot when your foot was cut off and you're dead? I don't know. He's an animal! He got hot with his foot cut off! I guess I'm an animal. That's just okay. What did you get hot at? The nurse's uniform. It's a moron, that's all. He's just an animal. It's guys detach and has nothing to do with them liking, loving. You put guys on a desert island, they'll do it to mud. Mud.
And of course, the wonderful
Christ and Moses both possessed humility. Why? Wisdom. That's it. Anybody who is secure, there's never any hostility because he's cool. So they just stand on the back of St. Patrick's and they listen, look around. Cardinal Spellman would be relating love and giving and forgiveness to the people, and Christ would be confused because their route took him through Spanish Harlem. And you would wonder what 40 Puerto Ricans were doing living in one room. This guy had a ring on it, was worth $8,000. And you would wonder at the grandeur. See, why aren't the Puerto Ricans living here? It's clean and nice. And maybe Bishop Sheen would see them back there. And run up to Spellman on the lectern. Psst, I want to talk to you for a minute. What is it? What is it? You'll never guess who's here. Who's here? You're not going to believe me. You're going to think I've been drinking. All right, who's here? Christ and Moses. Are you sure it's them? Well, I've just seen them in pictures, but I'm pretty sure it's them. Moses is a ringer for Charlton Heston, and I'm sure. They're back here, yes. All right, it's only... If this ever gets around now... It has. Oh, Christ, don't look in the front door. The lepers are coming.
And no doubt, as a result of this extraordinary victory lap that he was taking, he was busted 2 days into the gig as he came off stage by four NYPD detectives.
So was those? I mean, I knew around then that was the gig.
That was the gig. Huh. And he was busted for obscenity, but as I sort of figured out later, it wasn't really obscenity that Lenny was busted for. This is a whole other discussion, obviously, but it's my theory, which I expounded at some length in my book, Going Too Far, that Lenny was never really busted for obscenity. Lenny was busted for being very rude about Catholicism. And since the big cities in which he played, notably San Francisco, Chicago, and New York City, had police departments which were 90% Catholics. Irish,
yeah.
and or Italian, and therefore Catholic,
did not go down so well. And I think that's one of the reasons he was repeatedly busted in these places. But just as one little addition to that, the one of the few new pieces that Lenny was doing at that time in his routine was about the assassination. And he had a bug in his head about a Life magazine article which had shown Jackie. It's a very famous picture of Jackie sort of crawling off the back of the of the Lincoln. And Life captioned this obvious moment of fear and trembling on the First Lady's part as the First Lady going for help. Obviously, on the face of it, was absurd, but...
help was coming.
But help was standing on the side that was standing on the running board.
Right.
But Lenny really took exception to this, and what he said was, no, she was not going for help. She was hauling ass to save ass. And that went down, I mean, especially with the newly canonized Saint Jackie, the poor grieving widow.
A bit of a thud.
That did not go down at all well with the boys in blue. And I'm quite convinced that that's basically why he was busted. Because when he came back, having been bailed out to do the second week of his gig, he did the same thing and was busted again. And in the subsequent trial, of all the charges against him, there were actually 10 charges of obscenity against him, 9 of which were using words like, you know, cocksucker and yeah. Doing it with mud and, you
Does
know,
I mean, drinking coffee
Eleanor,
crosswords.
Yeah, well, I mean, but Eleanor Roosevelt's tits, you know. But the 10th one of them was that he said, and the First Lady was hauling ass to save ass. She wasn't going for help.
So they would say that ass was the obscenity when really it was the imagery.
Well, ass, I mean.
Right. Did you, though, get any notable response? Did you, like, creatively, did you grow from working his audience besides sort of being in his presence?
Not remotely.
Okay.
We did our twittering English satire to dead silence.
Okay.
But we didn't care that we were bombing. I mean, obviously, this was an extraordinary adventure to have had within 3 weeks of landing in the United States. And it taught us that, obviously, it was very, very easy, or apparently very easy, to become hot in New York.
Yeah.
And it was just as easy to get busted for being too funny.
Well, it sounds...
So these were mixed messages. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Well, it also, it's like a three-week... It sounds like what Hollywood would make out of the journey of a comedian or a comedy duo that you know you picked up by Jackie Mason, you get on a boat that is all a terrible, you know, you guys would probably be scared on the boat ride in the movie. You land at the shores with Cloud of Liberty. You show up, you do one gig, next thing you know, you're opening for Lenny Bruce and his famous thing. Like, Hollywood would make that all happen in 3 weeks. In reality, that happens over the course of 3 or 10 years, and you actually did it in 3 weeks.
We actually did it in 3 weeks.
Well, this has been another Talk with Tony.
Talk with Tony, thank you.
Discussion with Tony Hendra about some comedy stuff. We're going to keep doing this now and then because I think we found that our fans are also fans of comedy history, and stick around for more.
Welcome back to the conclusion of the final edition radio hour, A More Perfect Onion. It looks like we might make it after all.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
Each day, Arnold Prater has faithfully posted his support for the University of Kentucky's men's basketball team. Without his many posts, his many, many posts, the Kentucky Wildcats probably would have been ejected from the league.
Welcome to the World Room at Columbia University. The votes are counted, and here, finally, are the Pulitzer Prizes of 2014. Let's see. First of all, the Pulitzer Prize for Best BuzzFeed Quiz goes to Which Family Guy Episode Are You? No surprises there, I think. They actually included every Family Guy episode. They really refined the metric. Took 2 hours to take the quiz. Next, the Pulitzer Prize for Best GIF on Reddit. We had a lot of contenders on this one. Kitten chasing a dreidel, kitten doing a double take at a lemur, dog typing, and kitten calling grandma, but the winner has to be kitten sliding neatly between fence posts. I know, it was quite a contest, and we'll have plenty of time for unpleasant arguments on our webpage. Speaking of which, best unpleasant argument on a webpage. The winner, you'll all be pleased to know, is a 9,000 comment thread on 4chan.org about Firefly, a TV show that was only on the air for 3 months in 2002. I agree, and well-deserved. Next, a new category, the Pulitzer Prize for the best story that was broken too soon and turned out to be false but got a lot of web hits. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a 27-way tie.
28.
Oh, okay. A 28-way tie that...
They still may be counting.
Okay. Actually, they're still counting, so we'll get back to you on that one. Let's just move on to the last Pulitzer Prize, the one you've all been waiting for, the Michelle Malkin Award for leaving out crucial information from an inflammatory op-ed. And the winner this year of the Michelle Malkin Award for leaving out crucial information from an inflammatory op-ed is, once again, Michelle Malkin. I know, every year this is my favorite part. All right, folks, we've all got to blog this, so let's do it quickly and we can head down to the bar.
It's 29 now.
Okay, 29-way tie on the false headlines.
This is MSNBC Midday, and I'm your host. I still don't have a name, but the network promised to assign me something vaguely ethnic by next year. Well, recently, Reince Priebus, chairman of the Republican Party, objected to a tweet from this network about a new Cheerios commercial. As you may recall, a previous Cheerios ad with a biracial family triggered hostile reactions from the right. The new ad has the same family, and the tweet said, quote, "Maybe the right wing will hate it, but everyone else will go, aww." We at MSNBC realized it was reckless and offensive to say right-wingers would be offended by the ad, just because right-wingers were offended by a virtually identical ad. The tweet has been pulled, the person who wrote it has been fired, the part of the building in which they wrote it has been torn down, and all the words in the tweet have been removed from our style guide. As a result, Reince Priebus agreed not to call a boycott on our network, so my first guest today is a minor Republican Party functionary whose name doesn't matter. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on your weird show.
So, now the Republicans say they're not offended by interracial marriage, and with the door open for same-sex marriage across the country, is marriage equality a dead issue?
I think the real issue is that nobody is signing up for Obamacare, no matter how many people sign up for it. The economy is in a free fall, no matter how much it isn't. Kenya, school choice, reverse discrimination, states' rights, they're coming for our guns. Benghazi, harumph.
I see. Well, I'm glad we apologized for the tweet, or we would have missed those insights. Now, to my other guests. An MSNBC host who has had his name legally changed to Daryl, trying to sound like Rachel Maddow.
Hello!
And a first-time guest, a man with a political blog named after himself, Don Jatico of the Daily Jatico.
Thanks for having me. I know this is my big shot. I'm really pumped.
Daryl, trying to sound like Rachel Maddow. Do you think Republicans are really giving up on the marriage issue?
Let's remember that 5 years ago, the government passed the Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, which some think of as a triumph of Keynesian macroeconomic theory, while Republicans downplay its impact on the Great Recession. We just saw unemployment rates drop in 43 U.S. states in January, and I know what you're wondering. What does this have to do with the situation in Venezuela?
Let me bring Don Jatico into the conversation. Don, is marriage equality still a hot issue?
Well, I think people are paying less attention to that, and they're worried more about the concentration of wealth in this country. I mean, think about how much power and money reside in one place. Now that your parent company, Comcast, is buying out Time Warner, it's uncomfortably close to a media monopoly. What?
Please stand by. We are experiencing technical difficulties.
We are back with our guests, Daryl, trying to sound like Rachel Maddow, and our Republican spokesman. So we get all sides of the issue. And I want to turn the subject firmly back to marriage. Isn't love a good thing? And don't you wish there was more of it? Daryl, trying to sound like Rachel Maddow?
Love can actually connect all things in the universe, which is why we should stop and take a close look at a mayoral runoff election currently taking place in Seton, Pennsylvania.
And how about a Republican spokesman? Have you ever been engulfed in really intense love? The kind of love that tears you in half and gives you life and exposes your real, undignified, naked essence?
Obamacare is a failure.
We'll explore that some more after the break. This is MSNBC.
Hello, I'm Ted Cruz. You know, some of the greatest songs in the American folk song tradition are songs about disasters like floods or train wrecks. I've written this little ditty as my contribution to that disaster song legacy. It's called The Train Wreck That Is the Old Obamacare. And it goes something like this. I see that train wreck coming. It's coming down the pike. Obamacare is something that I just don't like, but I'm stuck here in the Senate, and that is where I am. All I can do to stop it, read Green Eggs and Ham. When I was just a baby born in You Don't Worry Where, my family fled the horrors of socialized health care. And we came to a country where folks are free to die. When I hear about Obamacare, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's poor folks living long and healthy lives, and income doesn't matter when it comes to who survives. I know about the benefits. I know some things are free. Now they're addicted to the sugar, and that's what tortures me. Train wreck and turn that train about. I'd ride it to the White House and kick that Kenyan out. And we live in a paradise for the ruling class. And if you can't afford insurance, then you can kiss my ass.
The Final Edition Radio Hour East was performed by Jeff Chrysler, Jen Dodd, Rob Gordon, John Marshall, Darby Worley, Bruce Cherrett, Kevin Janis, and Tony Hindra. The Final Edition Radio Hour West by Jeff Hendrick, Ebby Parker, Barry Link, Jim Earle, and Steve Rosenfield, with music by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. It was written by Barry Link, Jeff Chrysler, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, John Marshall, Steve Rosenfield, and Tony Hindra. The Final Edition Radio Hour was edited by Andrew Hammond and Greg Russ and produced by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production by Barry Lank. This has been a production of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2014.